The news of the death of American Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has caused another firestorm in US politics. The Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced that the Republicans will try hard to replace her before the November election, cementing more curt conservatism in the court to which she brought a strong liberal voice for so long. She died at 87, as you probably know, from complications with pancreatic cancer. And Karen Kasler is joining us, the State House Bureau Chief for Public Radio and Television in Ohio and our U.S. correspondent. Hello, Karen.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you. In the Chicago Sun-Times, for example, admittedly a strong liberal sort of paper, "Don't you dare," it says, "to shove a Trump nominee to the High Court through the Senate now would be the ultimate act of betrayal by a Republican Party that would finally and irretrievably deserve to be swept away into history." This is already a very hot debate where you are.
Yes, it is. And part of the reason why that statement is being made is because there was a similar situation in 2016 when President Barack Obama found himself with a vacancy when Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia died. He had about 8 months before the election. He was not running, but there was about 8 months left before the election. And Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican, of course, Barack Obama was a Democrat. Mitch McConnell said, "We need to wait until this upcoming election so the American people can have a voice in who is seated on the court because it's a lifetime appointment." A lot of Democrats got very upset about that because there were so many months. There were 8 months until from the time of Scalia's death until the election. And yet Mitch McConnell, who is the head of the Senate, which confirms the Supreme Court justice, said he would not even hold a hearing. He would not entertain anything about moving that nominee forward. Now, here we are with 40 some days before another election. And Mitch McConnell says that a nominee will be moved forward, that there will be a vote. And so it's a complete reversal from what he said in 2016 when there was a contested election and there was a possibility that a Democrat could win. And now here we are in a similar situation with fewer days left, and yet he says there will be a vote. So there are a lot of Democrats who are very, very angry about this.
Yeah. Well, Donald Trump is making the argument that there is an obligation to replace Justice Ginsburg without delay. Given the circumstances you've just described, though, do you think the Republicans will be able to get away with doing this?
That's a really good question. I think right now, it used to be it took 60 votes to confirm a Supreme Court justice, but that changed in 2013 I think that's right. But recently it changed. Now there are only 51 votes that it takes. And so that means that the Senate is dominated by Republicans right now, but not by much. And so if there are only a few Republican defectors, a few Republicans who say, "We're not going to confirm this candidate now," then there won't be a confirmation vote. And what that could mean is back in 2000, when George W. Bush and Al Gore were running, and the election had to be turned over to the U.S. Supreme Court to decide the final outcome, that is the nightmare scenario that a lot of people are worried about, that if there are eight justices, not nine, if there is not a replacement for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, then what happens if that decision does go to the U.S. Supreme Court? We could be up in the air with a tied election, and that's one reason why Trump wants to put a nominee on the court, because he feels that nominee would automatically support him if it is contested and it goes to the U.S. Supreme Court. But of course, that's the reason why Democrats don't want him to have that option.
Yeah, there is so much at stake, isn't there? Surprisingly, she was the unquestioned liberal leader of the court. She was widely worshipped, really. What for, most of all? I mean, we know that she championed the rights of women and minorities, but she fought for other issues of justice too. Her enduring legacy, Karen, will be what?
Well, and that's really interesting to point out, because women in particular really did revere what Ruth Bader Ginsburg had done, specifically on women's rights, not just abortion, but on other things. I mean, even things like, you know, holding a mortgage and things that were some very basic women's rights that really did not exist until she kind of came to the forefront. as a lawyer working her way up through the system and argued for the rights of women to be able to do the things that men could do. And of course, as you mentioned, being a liberal leader on the court for, you know, it was only recently that the U.S. Supreme Court decided that same-sex marriage could be upheld. She was part of that wing that upheld that. And so her decisions and her writings really stand strongly on the side of women and minorities and people who, as she often talked about, people who didn't have a voice. And so there are a lot of people who are, of course, leaning toward the Democratic Party who feel that without her voice and without that strong liberal wing of the U.S. Supreme Court, that they will lose in future court cases because all these issues keep getting litigated in different ways. I mean, the abortion issue is the biggest one that we talk about, where there's all sorts of different cases that start moving their way to the court, and there's a real fear without her voice and without her leadership that those groups are going to lose.
The notorious RBG, how did that nickname come into being?
Well, there was a rapper in the United States named Notorious B.I.G.
Yes.
And so there was a law student at New York University's law school who coined that term for her online, and it just kind of stuck. And it's really kind of funny because she was a very tiny little woman. I mean, she was under 5 foot tall, but she was just a powerhouse in terms of her work ethic and her ambition and her just desire to make sure that the causes that she cared about were being actively fought for. And there's lots of videos of her working out even into her 80s, even when she was sick. And so there's a ferociousness about her that nickname really just does really stick. And I mean, even in recent years, there have been a lot of videos that you'll see around Halloween time in America, where you'll see little girls dressed up in her signature black robe and lace collar, because she really stood for the causes that a lot of people really care about with women and minorities.
There were serious health issues for her for a long time, weren't there?
Yes. And it was really kind of shocking. When I got the news last night that she had died, I thought, well, wait a minute. I know she's been ill, but she's been ill before. I mean, she battled cancer. She battled all sorts of issues. And finally, I believe it was pancreatic cancer is the final cause. But, you know, and that's, of course, is a terrible cancer that claims an awful lot of victims. But it almost seemed unreal because she had fought for so long. She was 87 years old. She had taken some time off from the bench for hospital visits and for short stays, but had never retired. And that's pretty typical for a lot of Supreme Court justices to not retire, but she just almost seemed invincible. And she really made it clear, even to her final statements, that NPR was reporting that her granddaughter recorded one of her final statements as being that no, she should not be replaced until after the election.
Yeah.
So she really understood how important her position on the court was.
So was it a mistake for her, if you're a liberal, a mistake to have not retired during the Obama presidency when her replacement would have upheld her values?
I don't think she even considered it. I mean, she was in better health then, though she had had cancer and had fought it. I don't think she even considered it because I think that she really did love the work. And again, I think that's pretty common with Supreme Court justices. They love the work. They want to continue the work. Their legacy, they leave a legacy every time they write an opinion or weigh in on a difficult issue. And I think that that's something that they really value a lot. And to step down, I mean, I remember when Sandra Day O'Connor, who was the first woman appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court, retired several years ago. And it was kind of a big deal because it's unusual for Supreme Court justices to retire. Many of them do die in office because they just really feel that their work is so important that they want to be there.
When she called Donald Trump a faker during the 2016 campaign, I don't know what the circumstances were. I do know she apologized. But did that harden Republican hearts? Is that part of their determination now?
Oh, absolutely. And she's seen as somebody who really pushes against the causes that a lot of Trump voters really do support. I mean, again, talking about abortion, but also immigration and some of the big flashpoint issues that are going to come before the court in the next couple of years. She was on the side against a lot of the Trump voters. And so for her to speak out like that was kind of unusual because you don't often hear Supreme Court justices speak out in such definitive terms, though they could. They are appointed for life. And it's very, it's unprecedented for one to have been removed. But typically in America, justices, anybody in the judiciary, just doesn't speak their mind like that. And for her to do that was really kind of surprising. But she was, I think, known as being a fairly ferocious person. Like I said before, she really had strong opinions. When you read her opinions, her legal opinions, you see that she did have strong words for a lot of different topics.
Even Donald Trump's been fulsome in his praise of her, hasn't he?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, this is a terrible thing to say, but I was surprised to read such a wonderfully glowing statement about her last night. Donald Trump is not known for praising people, especially with three full paragraphs upon their deaths. He's quite often holds back even for a day or two. And when he does say things, they tend to be very short. But this was a very long statement. I think he may understand the significance of her place on the court, especially if indeed his election does go to the U.S. Supreme Court and the person he nominates to replace her could potentially be the person who helps decide his case. So I think there was a moment of reflection and maybe some clarity there. But I think it's also questionable whether he wrote what he wrote, what he tweeted out about her.
May her memory be a great and magnificent blessing to the world. All right. Our Prime Minister, Karen, said those who fought for the right for women to vote knew there were other challenges ahead in the battle for equality. People like Ruth Bader Ginsburg carried on that fight. She made an immeasurable difference to the lives of so many. How is that reflected in America today? Because, of course, the Supreme Court being the Supreme Court, as you've alluded to, she had defeats as well. So how is that reflected?
Well, I think, you know, there are a lot of people who are talking about her, not only in the decisions that she played a role in. And then she argued before the Supreme Court, even before she got there. I mean, some really important decisions. But I think there's another thing that has been talked about a lot in America, and that is her friendship, her bipartisan friendship with probably the most conservative justice on the court, who was Antonin Scalia, who I mentioned died in 2016. He was extremely conservative, and yet they were the best of friends. They went on trips together. There are pictures circulating of her and him on a trip in India sitting on the back of an elephant together. I mean, it's really kind of amazing when you think about how different they were, and yet they forged this friendship. And yet, upon her death, we are so partisan and divided in this country that it almost seems like it's something that can't be bridged. And so as we go into this heated battle at the end of what's already been a difficult year in America, to have this coming up in 2020, right before an election, as an election is happening, it's just, it feels really exhausting to think about. But this is where we are.
More fuel to the fire. Karen Kessler, yeah. Thank you very much for joining us. Always a pleasure.
Great to talk to you. Thanks.
Karen Kessler, our U.S. correspondent.